I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.
Okay, and we're back again. Yes, it is us. Who is us? I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm actually coming to you from in between worlds here right now. Fish and Frank here, Robert and Chair across from me, and Captain and Commander RJ in the control center.
Well, I got promoted to Captain. That's way cool.
Captain and Commander. I mean, there's only one. There can be only one. Today we're going to talk about the Okay, I'm going to get this right.
You had it right before we started.
Talakachopchohatchee. It's TALAKACHOPCHOHATCHEE or something. Talakachopchohatchee. In other words, the Peace River.
Right.
Yeah, that's actually the correct name for the Peace River. So,
if you can pronounce it.
Another one would be River of Long Peas. Now, yes. Robert was thinking vegetable. My mind went somewhere else.
Yeah, me too.
You know,
I had the same reaction.
Because
and it wasn't the River of Long Celery either. So
I mean, to me, it kind of all makes sense. But
I don't know about that.
So, well, isn't it nice how Robert goes to the pleasant vegetable ideas?
Yeah.
I'm thinking by the time Ponce de Leon got there, he was already old enough to have prostate things going on, you know? So
he was lucky to pee to begin with.
I was going
to
say that it would have been the River of Dribbles. So.
Right.
Let's see. We've got... I know, it just goes
Can
bad.
We start over?
It goes south real quick. I don't know why.
It went south real quick.
Yeah, all the way down to the Peace River.
Yeah.
All right. The reason we're bringing up Talakachopchohatchee is that there's been a lot of snook up there on the Peace River. Tarpon fishing, pretty fair. But it's a lot of small redfish around I-75 and some of the islands up there and around the Sansuchi Trestle, kind of between Shell Creek and I-75. Guys just tossing shrimp up against the mangroves, finding some smaller redfish. I would say average is probably 12 to 20 inches, but not too bad.
Well, and how long is the Peace River itself?
Well, the Peace River is actually 106 miles long. Now, it starts between Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda. When you go over the bridge between Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda on US 41, that is not Charlotte Harbor.
That's the end of the Peace River.
That's actually, the mouth of the Peace River, the end of the Peace River. And people always say, well, I'm going to go up and catch freshwater fish. Well, that's about a 15-mile ride up to freshwater right now.
Bare minimum, yeah.
Well, you got to go all the way up to where it meets Horse Creek.
Right.
Now, we have the water treatment plant, which is at the 761 Bridge. Charlotte County actually pulls water out of that plant, but they cannot do so all year.
No.
Because the salt will come up that far and make it a little too salty to actually pull for drinking water. But for, I would say, 7-8 months out of the year, they can pull water out of there.
Yeah.
But I don't think they're doing it right now. We got like 370 cubic feet per second of fresh water coming down. And to give you an idea, it takes 500 cubic feet per second to protect us from red tide. So we're under that minimum. Now, wait a minute. Guys have been catching a ton of gar at the US 41 bridge.
Right.
The Gilcrest Bridge is right there.
Yeah.
Now, gar like to stay in that first half a foot of water. What happens when a freshwater fish goes into salt water is the salt burns the gills of a freshwater fish.
Correct.
So once the salt gets up to just a little bit too high, it kills that freshwater fish. Where a saltwater fish can go into freshwater, as long as there's a few minerals and stuff, they can actually survive weeks, days, weeks, months, even years sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's very true.
But salt, freshwater fish going into saltwater is a bigger deal. What's up with the gar at 41 Bridge?
Well, we have had some rain this year, so like a lot of the people who fossil hunt way up on the Peace River, like from Arcadia North, have had a very difficult time getting into the river because it's been so deep. So I think there's just enough of a trickle coming down that river on the surface. And since gar like to swim within that first foot of the surface, I think there's enough dilution of the salt where they're able to maintain that. And well, they're such weak, slow swimmers, they don't do very well swimming against current.
Now, RJ, you're a diving. You've done deep dives, saltwater, freshwater, and all that kind of stuff. Don't you find it weird how fresh and saltwater don't mix? That the freshwater wants to ride on the top, and it doesn't want to blend with the saltwater. It'll actually just ride across the surface.
You see that sometimes, too, after a thunderstorm. You get a lot of fresh water on the surface, and it's quite salty underneath. And as you dive down, you can see the difference in the color of the water and in the amount of light that's transmitted. So I just think that the saltwater is so dense. You know, it stays in the bottom, and the freshwater is much lighter, stays on the top.
You know,
but I would always assume they would just mix.
You would
but
think
they
at
don't.
The end of the river, okay, the freshwater salt water, you would get the brackish mixture of fresh salt. Where
well, we see that where there's turbulence. You see brackish water where there's any kind of turbulence between. You know,
good point.
Where the river's coming out and the tide's pushing in, and those brackish areas are typically areas of turbulence.
Right, and wind can cause that also.
Wind can cause it also by pushing the top layer back over the top and spreading it underneath. So if you got something to mix it, yeah, you'll get them to mix. But leaving them on their own, they're not going to mix.
Yeah, no, it's pretty interesting to witness out there. And, you know, part of the reason why we're talking about that is because of so many people asking us about if there's a demarcation line on our river. You know, because a lot of states have, like, that are on saltwater, whatever, Delaware River, Chesapeake Bay, and stuff like that. Some of those states have actually put up, like, a demarcation line where it says this is the freshwater side, this is the saltwater side. But in Florida, they don't do that. You know, so, like, if you're up on the Peace River somewhere above I-75, you could catch a snook, you could catch a bass, you could catch a tarpon, you could catch a bluegill. You know, there's no overlapping boundaries there, and that the fish don't see any invisible fence because they can tolerate certain amounts of minor amounts of saltwater as far as freshwater fish go, the way Frank was talking about. So it's one of those weird things that confuses people of where do they need a freshwater license or where do they need a saltwater license while fishing anywhere up on the river.
Well, years ago, there was a law on the Peace River. If you were north of the 761 Bridge, you had to have a freshwater license. If you were south of the 761 Bridge, you had to have a saltwater license, or east and west, respectively. But what happened was so many of the fish, saltwater fish, go up the river, and in the summertime, like right now, we got gar down by the 41 Bridge. We've actually had bass come down as far as Harbor Heights. Now, the problem with it is once that river flow stops, the saltwater starts going back up, and the fish get pushed further and further back up the river. Right now, in order to find bass, you have to go to the other side of Horse Creek. You might find a bass at the mouth of Horse Creek, but I would say probably another half a mile north of that. But what's going on is an intentional zone. So if you're up there fishing with freshwater shiners, you have to have a freshwater license. Now, this is anywhere from like the navigator up. If you're from the navigator down to Port Charlotte, you better have a saltwater license.
Right.
But once you hit the navigator up, if you're fishing with night crawlers, you better have a freshwater license. You're fishing with shrimp, you better have a saltwater license.
Right.
If you have a, say, a freshwater license and you catch a snook, you have to move from that area. You can't be sitting there, you know, if you're catching a bass and a bass and a bass, then you catch a snook, no harm, no foul. But if you would catch a second one, you would have to move or you're intentionally fishing for that fish. But if I was up there with a saltwater license and I caught a bass in that spot, I would have to move, because if my first fish is not what's on my license and I don't move, then I'm intentionally fishing for that fish.
Right.
So if you're a resident, it's not bad. It's $33. You get a freshwater saltwater license, no big deal. But if you're a non-resident, that's $47.50 and $47.50. Or if you don't go up there that much, get the year-long license for whatever, saltwater or freshwater, and then just get like a three-day if you plan on going way up the river in the opposite license.
Right. And that would make the most sense.
So. Getting into a little bit of fishing right away, or not right away, we've already burned up half the show. So, Pompano, what's going on with Pompano?
Been getting a lot of good reports on Pompano this last several days. Last week was kind of like the beginning, little precursors to it, I guess, because I had a few mixed reports, but this week, a lot of reports. Venice Jetties, Inglewood Beach, Stump Pass, even down through Boca Grande, along the beaches and in the passes themselves, a lot of people have been catching Pompano. And there's been some small permit mixed in with them, too, so if you know the difference, you know, that's why the Game of Fish kind of makes it a little easy on us as far as bag limits and size limits.
They're more similar now than they used to be.
Yeah.
All right. What's the number one way to catch them?
Honestly, one of those banana jigs. You know,
so the crazy jig, silly jig, whatever. Basically, they're all banana jigs, but whatever name they want to put to them. Mm-hmm. A long, slender jig with a hook. And quite often, you use a teaser. Now, I'm big on having the little teaser, which is a hook with mylar or feather on it in addition to the regular hook, so you have twin hooks on it. Do you do that, or do you do them just single plain Jane?
I just use them plain Jane personally. Now, I've caught them on both ways, but I just have a little bit more confidence with the single.
All right. I use the tandem, and then I want to take about a quarter inch to half inch. I use the strip fish bites. Right. Now, I like the bloodworm flavor for my pompano.
Right.
I think that one's a really good one for the pompano, and I usually will cut the strip lengthways in half and then put about a 3/8 inch to half inch piece on the hook, because I don't want it to mess up the action. So I want a very small piece, just a little bit there for taste. And pompano and permit, always, they like coming from behind to grab stuff. I don't know why, but they come from the back, they grab it. If you have a regular bucktail jig and you're fishing for pompano or permit, the number one thing you want to make sure you do is, if you start feeling bump, I got a bite, but you're not getting any fish, take a scissors, trim the hair off within 1/8 of an inch of the hook, and all of a sudden you'll start catching a lot of pompano. If you don't want to do all of the bucktail off of it, go about half of it, cut that so it's on the top side a little bit, and you can leave a little trailer on the bottom of the hair. But if you still start feeling bumps and no fish, you got to cut that part off too. But yeah, the banana jigs work real well.
Right. You know, and but you can use them by themselves, but you can also use them, like you said, with the fish bites. And then another thing that I've done over the last few years is I use gulp every now and then, and sometimes it gets beat up or split while working it, or puffer fish beat it up. I'll save my old gulp, and I'll use a little tiny piece of that to tap onto.
So you take, like, a gulp shrimp, once it gets a little too beat up to use as a lure, and cut it into pieces to use it as a scent trailer, little fish enticement bite.
Right.
Just put a little piece on the hook of another lure, or even just on a hook, and use it.
Yeah. So. That seems to work good, just the kind of way of reusing it, rather than going and getting all frustrated, saying, oh, my first cast of puffer fish took the tail off and discarding it.
Yeah.
Save it and use it.
Use it as pieces of bait. You can use it as chum if you chop it up real thin. But
because it is biodegradable.
Right.
It's perfectly fine.
And the nice part about it is you can use a grouper and snapper fishing on a jig legally, because if you take a standard bucktail jig or a big curltail or paddletail jig and you put shrimp, squid, sardines, anything on there that's natural bait, It has to be a circle hook if you're fishing in the Gulf of Mexico for like grouper or snapper. So that circle hook law applies to any reef species, snappers, groupers, stuff like that. But it doesn't work. You don't have to have a circle hook for cobia or amberjack or Spanish mackerel or king mackerel or any of the pelagics, just the reef. But the cool thing is, I like grouper and snapper fishing with bucktail or curltail jigs.
Right.
So I can put gulp shrimp that's been all tore up or gulp bait and put a little piece of that on the hook, or I can use the fish bites on the hook. Legal, and it catches fish.
Oh, it's perfectly legal, and it is amazing how well it works.
Okay. Spanish mackerel, speaking of them, this has been... we had a great couple weeks of mackerel. What's this week looking like? Windy! I ain't going out there. I'm going to die!
I agree with that. Okay. It's been a little too windy. I mean, the wind's cranking out of the north at 15 to 25 miles an hour, gust 25 to 30 today. So it's a little sporty out there.
All right, I'm going to regress. But the winds, with all the pompano along the shore, the reason they're right next to the shore and the beach is all of the food right there. Sand fleas, little crabs, little shrimp, bait fish, all that stuff is right along the edge of the beach.
Right.
What's this wind going to do to it?
Well, since it switched out of the north, it actually might enhance it because that pounding that it's going to take on that surf really dislodges a lot of those little sand fleas and bait fish and little clams and stuff. And it clouds up the water a little bit. So, one, it's a little harder for the pompano to see, but it's a lot harder for the their prey items to see them coming. So sometimes that gets them to really move in close and bunch up in areas and start feeding real well.
So literally feeding immediately next to the shoreline.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't, you're casting.
Drop it off the end of your rod tip.
Yeah.
Jig. So, like you're ice fishing, just kind of walk along. Not really, but I mean, it's the same principle.
But you can cast out and they're going to be in the easy casting distance of the land.
Yeah, just now, cast parallel down the beach.
It might be a little too much waves to actually do that today, but as this breaks down, when the wind was blowing out of the east, would it have any effect on them?
Not necessarily as much because, you know, the land actually blocks the first mile or two going offshore, so a lot of times, even if it's blowing 15 or 20 out of the east, the Gulf beaches are usually glass calm.
So with no wave action, it's not going to help or hurt?
Not much, no.
But if it comes out of the north, west, or south, that could actually, while make it difficult to fish one day, actually enhance it for the next. How long would you say that enhancement of being all churned up? You think it'd be, let's say if it starts dying down tomorrow, you think that's going to hold through the weekend?
I think it's very possible. I mean, it depends on how long this disturbance lasts. Even if it dies down, you still have those residual waves that could last sometimes several days. So
you're thinking this weekend ought to be really good, going right along the beach, pompano, permit, whatever have you.
Oh, definitely Friday and Saturday should be no problem, and even into Sunday, because the wind's really not supposed to start slowing down until late tomorrow afternoon, early evening.
So as it slows down, the waves decrease. Mm-hmm. The effect, enhanced effect of the food dislodged should bring in tons of fish.
Right. And the other thing it can do, or does, is it will push in bait fish schools that are offshore. Because right now there's a lot of Spanish sardines, you know, true Spanish sardines.
It's amazing. They've been catching sardines them all the way up to the 41 bridge.
Right. We haven't seen that in, what, 18 years?
White bait, Spanish sardines, thread fins, glass minnows. The harbor's got a lot of bait in it.
Right. But there's a lot of bait offshore, and when that wind drives it in, it can push those bait fish in closer, which will bring in Spanish mackerel, cobia, small sharks. I mean, there's a lot of different little things that can actually make the near beaches very comfortable fishing for the next several days.
All right, as the resident brain, RJ, if we're out cast netting for bait all the time, the birds are beating up the bait all the time, and they start losing numbers... Now, to me, the ones that survive are the ones that don't readily go to the surface, right?
I would think so.
The ones that just tended to stay deeper.
Yeah.
So, as they spawn, a big percentage of their offspring would tend to stay deeper, not go closer to the surface. just by natural selection, right?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure that that's the effect that's going on. A couple of comments to add to what Robert was saying about the beaches. Right now, one of the things you have to watch for if you're fishing from the beach, an old surf fisherman here telling you to watch out, the wind's from the north, the current's from the north. So you're going to have some real strong undertow, and with those waves, you know, just be careful what you're doing there. But I think the comment on the bait fish is they come in for the same reason that the pompano are coming in, is that you're roiling all this small stuff up that they eat, you know, minuscule animals and clams and things like that, and all kinds of fry and stuff. And so the bait are coming in for that, and the pompano and the permit and the Spanish mackerel and the other ones are coming in for the bait fish. So I think that's just a natural cycle.
What's going on is we got so many people saying there's no bait there, there's no bait, there's no bait, and we know there's probably the most bait we've had in 5 or 10 years. The one thing that I'm hearing from the captains who are getting the bait is they're not on the surface. They're not dimpling the top. You can't see them easily. They're under the surface. They see them flash underwater, but they're, even when they're chumming, a lot of the bait fish are not coming to the surface to boil and dimple and look like ringing on the water.
And I would think with strong currents like we're seeing right now.
No, I mean in the harbor and in the Gulf.
Okay, so
both places.
It just could be that there's more for them to eat down low, and there's no reason to come to the surface. Coming to the surface means somebody's going to eat.
Off the coast, and that's what my point was. We've cast netted so much bait, we almost wiped ourselves out. But the ones that get cast netted are the ones that show themselves on the surface. And you're always going to have some that stay deep and some that tended to go higher. If we've cast netted most of the ones that tend to go higher, are we just changing them, making them evolve, and more of the ones that survived, spawned, and bred again are the ones that tended to stay deep, not going to the surface?
Could very well be. Yeah.
We could have actually changed a species' behavior just because we took out the ones that tended to do this.
Well, we know that we as humans have an incredible impact on the natural world, and we accelerate evolution. You know, things that wouldn't happen in that time frame naturally, we push the envelope and make things happen.
Well, off the coast of South America, where Spanish sardines are harvested, the numbers of the bait got so low, and they were out studying them, the scientists were studying them, and then they found, wait a minute, they're not spawning once a year. They literally started spawning twice a year to try and save their numbers. And nature's pretty strange. Even humans. Humans adapt to everything. We evolve into, look at the average. When I was a kid, I mean, everybody would laugh at me because I had such big feet. You know, I'm size 12 feet back in the 60s was, or early 70s, was very uncommon. And now, yeah, they're 12s. And now 13, 12 is an average foot. And so we're evolving and changing and you know, like you say, with all the climate change, which is very real. Because look, we had the Dust Bowl from the 30s. We had a Dust Bowl. Now we're having floods. We had some nice years. Everything changes and evolves. Climate change is very real. But to say that it's permanently one way, it was just a few years ago, Georgia and Tennessee were arguing over water because they were out of water in Atlanta. They needed more reservoirs, and now they're getting flooded. And that was 6 years ago. So the climate, I'm 100% on board with climate change because it changes every couple years. And it gets worse, it gets better. But biggest fan of global warming in history, absolutely love global warming. I owe my life to global warming. Because if there was no global warming, there'd be a mile and a half of ice on Illinois where I was born. So, you know, you got to love it. Without global warming, there would have been glaciers still covering the Illinois. So forget the last 20, 30 years. I'm very appreciative it came 10,000 years ago when it really started. So just me. But getting back into it.
He would have been ice fishing, Frank.
Ice fishing, Frank. I don't know if anybody would be living there. I mean, my ancestors mostly troglodytes. They like fire, warm places. So I'm not sure we did well in ice. You know.
So can I tell an ice fishing joke?
Sure.
Murray and O'Toole decide to go ice fishing, and they get out onto the ice, and they start drilling a hole, and they hear this disembodied voice, and the voice says, "There is no fish under the ice." So that kind of spooks them a little bit, and they move a little further on, start drilling another hole, and the voice says, "I told you, there's no fish under the ice." And Murray looks up at the sky and says, "God, is that you?" And the voice says, "No, this is the rink announcer."
Nice.
Yes.
And with that, boys and girls, we'll
so what, are you, dun. What are you saying about Irishmen?
Yeah, well, and I'm Irish, so I can do that.
Oh, okay. It's so just, I could change it to, like, something with wits or its or ski or something?
That's right. You can certainly do that.
Yeah, you can do Pollock jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that.
Okay.
You're allowed.
I'm just saying, I thought that would have been a little bit more appropriate than
okay. Irish. No.
But still funny.
No.
That's funny.
You
got to
know the
you
Irish.
Are.
So, I mean, he plays Irish bands and Irish music. He's, you know, lives the Irish. So,
yes,
what's going on with Sharky, speaking of stuff along the shore? Rumor mill and gossip mill.
Yeah. Supposedly they are closing it April 1st for 3 months for either renovations or repairs. You know, that is the rumor slash gossip going on, so
I will,
anyone can confirm.
I will
it,
say
be great.
The people that run Sharky's have the exact same luck as me. Last fall, there was nobody there. All the red tide, everything was shut down anyway. They could have renovated it. The county, you know, or whoever's helping with the renovations could have done all that while no one was there. But having one of the best years ever, lots of tourists, the water's beautiful, everything's... So what do? Let's shut down the pier. Cost them a little more money.
Yeah.
And Easter happens to be the 21st this year, and that's usually the time of the great migration back north. So there's still a lot of people down here that are willing to spend money, and they're shutting the place down.
It's not even that. We have snowbird season, where we have all the birds come down, you know... And we have a ball with the snowbirds. They're really nice. And then Easter comes, and you have a pause. And then tourist season starts. Because May, June, up until the 4th of July is tourist season. And I get a kick out of it. Every year I go into the restaurants, and they're going, "I don't understand why we're so busy. Season's over. Wow, this is..." I'm like... You guys, season ends July
listen,
4th.
Yeah, boys and girls, listen to the accents.
Yeah, I mean, it's all tourists. There are people coming to tarpon fish, shark fish, do all kinds of stuff. But you have snowbird season and tourist season. And it's been going on for years. And they all get excited in October. And in October, you get the other ones. The ones that will, they're all here. I don't know where they go, but I don't see them anywhere. The roads get busy, but they're not in the stores.
Right. Yeah, I don't understand that at all.
But season down here really kicks in about November up until the 4th of July. That's actual season south of I-4. But snowbird, then tourist. And we're lucky. We get a lot of all of them and a lot of locals, and it's been fun. Hard part for us, we can't tell the snowbirds from the locals because some of the locals don't fish when it's hot. They only come in the winter.
Yeah, that's true.
So I've actually had locals I thought were snowbirds and snowbirds I thought were locals because I saw the snowbird more than I saw the local guy because he didn't like to fish when it's hot out. And it gets up 95 degrees and it's 113 in the sun. They ain't going. Mm. So we see them as it cools down. So let's see. Where are we? Bonnet sharks, black tips, bulls, hammerheads, shark. Go ahead.
That's been getting pretty.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Robert.
Nope.
Dodo.
Well, let him get off that before you start, Robert.
Right. From Marker 5 or Cape Hayes Point out to Boca Grande Pass and then up and down the intercoastal. Has been where a lot of those smaller sharks are at, in that 2 to 4 foot range, which are fine, where you don't need any
Speak
real...
Speak up, Robert. The music's playing.
You don't need real heavy tackle. You can use your snook and redfish tackle and go out and have a real good time with them. If you got some tarpon gear, it wouldn't hurt to bring that, because some of those black tips are running in that 4 to 5 foot range, and they'll
and
dump
they
some.
They skyrocket,
along.
Do backflips.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
It's a tarpon with teeth.
It's a tarpon that bites back.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, they're pretty amazing.
So you got black tips that jump out of the water and go crazy. Mm-hmm. What is it? Spinners.
Spinner sharks. Yeah. And there's a few of those around, but most of those are starting to leave now because the water temperature is getting warmer. And contrary to a lot of people's thoughts, is that just because it jumps, it's automatically a spinner shark. Going into that late March, early April thing, on through the whole summer, if it jumps 99% of the time, it's a black tip. Your spinner sharks like that cooler water. They'll migrate themselves north towards the Panhandle and over to the Atlantic coast.
I would say black tip is my favorite shark to catch. They're, in my opinion, one of the fastest, and they jump out of the water, and literally you hook them up, and you're watching your line go across the water, and the water, it literally looks like one of those fountains in Vegas where the water's just throwing up in the air, and then all of a sudden this fish hits the end of it, and he comes up and does a backflip for you, goes in the water, and they're tasty. Yummy, yummy. I mean, this is some good stuff.
Absolutely.
I don't keep many. And how big a shark should you keep? Get asked that question all the time. We're going to answer this over and over again this year. Look at your ice chest. It's got to fit in the ice chest. Don't keep one that won't fit in the ice chest.
Right.
That's as simple as it is. If you got a 3-foot ice chest, your shark's going to be around 3 foot long.
Yeah.
And you got to gut them right away, put them on ice, and that's how they stay good. Eating a shark that you caught that lay on the deck of the boat all day, yeah, that sounds like...
Sounds like you're better off eating the bottom of the harbor.
Yeah.
That shark goes bad really fast.
You won't die from it.
Yeah, but you're not going to like the taste of it. It's like going deer hunting and dragging the deer back to the car for a half an hour before you decide to do the gutting and the cleaning.
Yeah.
You might as well not bother.
If you kill the deer and 3 hours later you gut them and then, you know, decide, okay, it's 90 degrees out, I don't have to ice that meat.
Now, the main thing is you nailed it with, you can gut the shark, but it still has to remain in whole condition. You cannot cut the head off or the tail off to try to get it to fit in your cooler.
Good point.
You know, and most importantly, make sure you're 100%.
That's what, about $500 if you get caught with the head and tail removed?
Yeah, probably at least that. You know, because, I mean, there's all sorts of ramifications that can happen. But the other thing is, make sure you know the species of shark, because a juvenile bull shark looks very, very similar to a black tip, and black tips don't have a size limit on them, but bull sharks do. You know, a bull shark has to be 54 inches at the fork of the tail, so basically it's a 6 foot long plus shark.
And bull sharks don't have any black tips, really. And a black tip has mostly black tips, but the anal fin is white.
Right.
So you can distinguish, if it's a little darker gray on the fins, no, it's not a black tip, it's a bull shark. Even though when they're young, they look almost very, very similar, except for the coloration. But if you look and the anal fin of the shark is got a black tip on it, it's not a black tip.
Nope, it's probably a spinner shark, and a spinner shark also has a 54-inch minimum. So you do need to be careful with it. It's annoying, it's frustrating, and I get it, but the main thing is,
and you need a pocket Robert with you to be able to tell what species of shark you're catching.
Yeah.
I want to regress back into the mackerel thing. Guys that are trolling for Spanish mackerel, and we all want to troll spoons. Everybody wants to troll spoon because it's just, they catch a lot of fish. The problem is, what kind of line are you using? Do you have braided line on all your reels? Don't troll a spoon. That's a lot of money to throw away, because I cannot figure out how to get braided line straightened out.
No, I don't know either. I've dragged it before, and it doesn't work.
Sometimes it makes it worse.
Yeah.
So if you're going to want to troll spoons for the Spanish mackerel here, take one of the rods you don't use a lot and bring it in. We'll put the braided line on something. If you've got a spool, we can put it on. Load it up with monofilament. Or if you're short on a reel and you have one you need new line on, we can take the line from the one that you don't use a lot, put it on one that you do use a lot that you want to replace the line with. But the object is to put monofilament back on the rod. Now, getting a rod that you control a spoon and just a regular spinning rod, because you don't want anything really heavy for Spanish mackerel. When you get into some great big baits for the kings, we jump up, get a heavier rod. But for most of it, just a regular spinning rod is what you want. It's more fun, controls the bait better. So you want to go back to 10, 12-pound monofilament. And the reason is, when you're trolling a spoon, now I use a ball-bearing swivel between the monofilament and the leader, and then I use a ball-bearing snap swivel on the spoon itself. Two ball-bearing swivels, not barrel swivels. Ball-bearing, B-A-L-L, ball-bearing. Because barrel swivels are metal on metal. You have a little thing that kind of looks like the Omega symbol and the college things. You know, it's got a flat bottom, a loop, and another flat bottom. And that goes in the hook inside a metal bearing. Metal on metal does not swivel. They should be called great line connectors. They should not be called swivels. I don't know what the actual name for them could be. Connect-a-link or something. But swivels only swivel if they have good ball bearings in them. So I use the American Fishing Wire AFW ball bearing swivels. So like $3.39 a pack. It's not near as expensive as the Spro. Although I will say Sampo ball bearing swivels, American made Sampo, are the best ball bearing swivels in the world. But they're very spendy. So I can get them for about half that price with AFW, and they work 90% as well. Now, with the two ball bearing swivels, I'm still going to get line twist trolling a spoon, even with two of them. So when you're trolling monofilament, what you're doing is you're pulling a line, it's getting twisted up like a little kid rubbing the propeller on a rubber band airplane, and the line gets more and more, it starts to look like wrought iron. It's got that twisted look to it. So you cut off all swivels, all everything off there, so you have just bare line, put the tip and the rod in the water, and then loosen your drag way up and slowly start feeding line out. What you want to do is let out about a third more line than what you were trolling. Wait about 1 to 2 minutes, you reel the line back in with a tight drag, and you have brand new monofilament again. All the twists are gone. Everything's nice and easy. Let it out behind the boat, drag it straight, reel it back in, put your stuff back on, go trolling again. This is simple and easy with mono. If you do the exact same thing with braided, it's just, it could even get worse.
Yeah.
Braided line, for some reason or other, does not like to troll out the twist. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, and I don't understand it either. It makes no sense to me, because like you said, you know, you pull it behind the boat with mono, and it just goes the opposite direction of which it was twisted and untwists itself, stretches itself out, and straightens right out. But with braid, it'll still keep twisting that same direction in which it already started at, and I don't understand it at all.
So the best idea is just take an old rod that you're not using a lot, you want to use for trolling, throw some monofilament line on there, 10, 12, 15, 20-pound test, whatever you like, put your spoons on it, troll with the mono line. What we're finding out more and more and more is braided line is good, but it is not the line. It is another line as a tool. Monofilament has some great things about it. I can catch more fish than anybody on the flats by simply switching to 8, 10-pound monofilament line, putting a leader on it. Using the same thing in braid, I will catch more fish than you. They're not going to see my line or my leader. It's not as spooky. You're going to catch more. But mono's too dangerous to use against the mangroves because monofilament doesn't like to break. It wants to stretch, and it acts like a bungee cord. So you get it caught in the mangroves, and you're pulling on it, pulling on it, and all of a sudden the hook lets loose, and it comes zipping back at you with the force of a .22 caliber bullet.
And it hurts.
At least a BB gun. I would say quite often like a .22. So monofilament is too hard to break. I use braided line against the mangroves, against pilings and all that, because it's so easy to break. A quick, sharp jerk on it, pops it, snaps it, easy peasy, nobody gets hurt.
Right.
But in open water, braid allows me to cast really heavy line, but if I get open water, I don't need that heavy line. I need sneaky, invisible line. And that's when I go back to monofilament, open water. So you should have rods with braid on it, rods with mono on it. If you're going to troll spoons, you want monofilament. If you're going to fish on the flats in open water, I strongly recommend you go back to some 6 or 8 pound monofilament. Do you know this is where the whole myth, the stupid stuff, and I mean this is seriously stupid. This isn't a misconception. This is an urban myth legend that went ridiculous. Swivel scare fish. This is so dumb. The same guy, and I'll prove it to you in just a couple of sentences, the same person who's going to tell you how swivels actually terrify fish, and you'll never catch a fish because you got a swivel on there because it scares the fish, will anytime take a split shot and put it on his line. Now, why does a chunk of lead not scare a fish, but a little swivel made out of metal a third the size will scare a fish? Do you get any?
No, and I never believed that myth either about swivels scaring fish.
Where that all
stomping
started,
on the bottom of the boat scares fish.
Yes.
You know, throwing a beer can over the side could scare fish.
No, I like that.
True.
Now, knowing you, I would often ask if they were making you that upset, was it a full can of beer? But I'm sure yours was empty.
Empty.
Yes, empty. Okay. you know, one's for hurting, the other's for frustration. And I don't know, you drink a can of beer, I don't think you should be that frustrated.
Right. Oh, that's true.
How the monofilament or the swivel myth got started. When people first started using, instead of steel, we went to monofilament leader material.
Right.
Before monofilament leader material, people would take monofilament line, tie a steel leader on there, and then all of a sudden we found out we get more hits, more fish with a clear monofilament line used as a leader. So we went from 10-pound, 12-pound mono up to a 25 or 30-pound test leader material. Gave the fish longer to chew through it.
Right.
When you're tying from very clear monofilament line to very clear monofilament leader, that swivel was the only visible part.
Right.
That was it. You had clear and clear, your hook, your lure, but there was nothing in between it. So the swivel was the one thing that would look out of place there. Possibly, you know, maybe spooking a fish because there's just something hanging out there in the middle. But it gave you very clear. As soon as braided line came out, the myth persisted. But braided line's 100% visible, and we have these little tiny mighty mini swivels. 90-pound swivel that you can barely see.
Yeah,
and he goes,
so
I can't put that on.
Nail. You put it right on top of your pinky nail, and it's fits.
It's tiny, tiny.
And they're like, what, 80 or 100-pound tensile strength? It's ridiculous.
Ridiculous amount of tensile strength.
Well, remember that guy years ago that came up with the Invisi-Swivel?
The invisible swivels and the invisible sinkers.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about the sinkers.
The whole thing about this, and this was big when, by the time we went from mono, we had monofilament line, monofilament leader. Then we got fluorocarbon leader with monofilament line. So nobody wanted anything on there.
Right.
And so they came out with fluorocarbon swivels.
Right.
And then a guy came out with clear acrylic sinkers.
That was a pretty brilliant idea, though. I got to give
it
that one.
It was amazing. We only had them. I wish I would have saved a couple.
Yeah, that would have been a neat one just to have.
Because to have the clear fluorocarbon swivels, the clear acrylic sinkers, and this is what started the whole thing about swivel scaring fish, was making everything invisible. And then braided line came along, and nobody decided to change their mind, even though everything else changed. So braided's 100% visible. Put a swivel on the end of it. The only thing that that can do is maybe chip your rod tip.
Right. Exactly.
Reeling a swivel into your tip or your rod means we're going to make another $2.80 replacing the tip of your rod.
Yes. And it gets frustrating, too, though, if you're out fishing, especially at night, because sometimes it's hard to see that swivel and hard to see that. But the thing
but
you
if
can
it's
do,
at night, I'm going to put a bead on.
Right. And that's what I was just going to say. A bead up above your swivel on your main fishing line helps.
It protects your tip.
It almost eliminates it. And they even make silicone ones that are soft, real soft, that you can pull right, all right, up to it
now,
and won't damage it at all.
If you're fishing at night, you're going to use a red bead, a green bead, or glow-in-the-dark bead?
I'll probably go with a red bead.
Okay. I would pick either red or green, but never glow-in-the-dark.
Right.
Why, if you're trolling for Spanish mackerel, do you want black or silver swivels?
Oh, I definitely want a black one.
Okay, why?
Because the mackerel will bite it off.
Exactly. You get one fish on, all the other fish are chewing around trying to get to it. They're going to try and eat everything in his mouth rather than the baits that's readily there.
Right.
They want to fight over it. They see that swivel, and boom, they're going to hit it.
Right. And even this time of year, you know, you can argue the swivel or not argue the swivel, but you and I did that, what, 15 years ago when it was this time of year, the water's super clear out there. They were biting our swivels off, and they were biting our line-to-line knots off.
Yep.
You know, we ended up getting so frustrated, we started tying direct to steel to the mono without a swivel, but then we started tying fluorocarbon directly to the mono, and they were coming up and biting the line-to-line knot coming through the water because the water was so clear that there was still somehow a minor disturbance in that water, and those fish are in such a feeding frenzy, they see the slightest imperfection in that water. They were taking shots at it, and we were watching it from 5 feet off the boat when they were doing it because we couldn't figure out why we kept getting bit off.
And now, there's the reason I wouldn't use the glow bead at night. Same reason you wouldn't use a silver swivel for the Spanish mackerel.
Right.
Putting a glow bead to protect your rod tip in front of the swivel makes them more likely to hit that line, to chew through it right at that point.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you got your phosphorescent jellyfish, you've got squid, and there's a couple other species of fish that we have in our area that have that glow-in-the-dark kind of appeal to them when excited or freaked out. Predators hone in on that and will take advantage on taking a shot at your line and possibly biting you off.
So. Wait a minute, we're trying to figure out how much time we have left in this. Five. I'm doing six, RJ's doing
many,
10.
I had too many fingers going there.
God, man, we're in good shape. Between the remodel,
I thought we were playing rock, paper, scissors there for a minute.
No fish,
you guys
there.
Have people moving in next to you here, real estate and a bunch of other people in the new units. You've got your new sign going out front.
Right, right.
Lots of cool renovations here at the big WKDW. Fish and Franks is undergoing phase two of the remodel. We've got all the new stuff in the back, the mural, a lot of decking going in, refacing. So RJ and I are a little whooped. Every time it's just one project after another. It doesn't stop.
Yeah, we're doing renovations in El Jobin on the recording studio. And
you have the Barking Frogs
shop.
Recording studio.
Right, and the Luthier shop now, turning the barn into the Luthier shop. So we're all beat right now.
Yeah, and so we sit here looking, how many minutes we got left? Yeah. I don't know. But anyway, can you use a steel leader to catch fish?
Sure.
100%.
Absolutely.
There's no reason in the world that you shouldn't use a steel leader, except number of hits.
Absolutely. I mean, it depends on the species. I mean, if you really are targeting snook, you're going to reduce your hits significantly this time of year during the daytime.
Now, does it matter if you use steel, monofilament, fluorocarbon, whatever at night?
Not really.
It's dark out, boys and girls. Get over it. No. Oh, steel's going to scare my fish. It's dark out. Get over it.
I think the only time that I've noticed a difference with any leader at nighttime is two things. One, if it's a super, super, extremely strong current, the vibration of the steel could make a little bit of difference in the noise in the water.
Now, wouldn't the braided make that same noise?
It,
so
it does.
You got to go back to mono if you got a heavy current?
Absolutely. Or you lengthen up your leader to an extreme point. And then the other time I've had to eliminate my leader altogether is when there's been a lot of phosphorus in the water.
Oh, I just give
right
up at
to
that
my
point.
Line to line, or go right to my line directly to my hook or lure.
I give up at that point. I am not interested. Once you get all that green glow in the water, the only thing I want to do is get in a boat, go out and do circles and donuts, throw my cast net. I want to watch the show, forget the fishing.
And try filming that. It's horrible, but it's so amazing to watch.
And it's natural. It's not phosphorus from the phosphate mine.
No.
It's not phosphate. It's phosphorus.
It's a type of algae.
And it comes into the harbor in patches. You'd be going along at night, coming back from a fishing trip, and all of a sudden, the whole, you could read inside the boat. You look like you're in a space orb of green glow, and it lights up the whole inside of the boat. Then it goes away.
Yep.
And then you find more. But I used to take people out. When I was doing charters, I'd call my regular customers, say, come on to the house, you got to go out and see this. Take and just run along. You see the big, it looks like you're in Star Wars.
Yeah, it's rather amazing and stunning to see. Well worth it. And it usually happens towards the beginning of the real heavy part
of
the rainy season and at the end of the
racing. We stay on track here,
always.
Don't you?
Perfect.
What were we talking about?
Really, there was green, pretty stuff in the water.
I want to go back to a quick point you made about having a rod with, you know, with monofilament on, and then you got your other rods with braided on. This is the best excuse to tell your significant other why you need additional fishing poles and reels.
Yes.
Good point.
Use it. We gave it to you. Use it.
And ladies, it works on your husband as well. When you need that extra fishing pole, you just look at him and go, you know, I got to have one with mono on because I got to have it for
the twist,
you know,
yeah.
The light twist. So
absolutely. No, that's pretty good stuff. I like that. Any excuse to get a second rod.
Yep. So anyway, we've kind of bashed around a million topics.
Well,
you got 30 seconds, Robert.
The wind's
going to
lay down today, or tomorrow, I should say. Get ready for everything. The water's going to get real nice. Go out there and start chasing some of the different species of fish around and have everything ready.
And RJ's been frustrated. The second hand is literally laying in the bottom of this clock up there. Somebody smacked it up against the wall, knocked the hands off of it. I'm like, wow.
Nice.
Fish and Frank here wondering, where is it all going to lead to? But we're still here. We're still going. RJ in the control center. Robert, our blind tarp in there. Me? We're still here, man. See you next one.
I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.